So I thought I'd talk a bit about what do we understand by the founders and how do we relate to the founders? How does that fit in with our practice here and now? And I think for me the underlying approach to it is really of looking at all those who have practiced in the past and passed down the teaching. The underlying feeling or approach is one of gratitude, really, that without the practice of those in the past, Buddhism wouldn't be available to us today. And Dogen mentions this in Shishogi. You're probably familiar with this quote from Shishogi. He says, "If the truth had not spread throughout the entire world, it would have been impossible for us to have found it. Even should we have been willing to give our very lives for it, we should think deeply upon this. How fortunate have we been to be born now, when it is possible to see the truth." And he mentions a couple of stories where animals have expressed gratitude for being rescued or saved. And then he says, "If animals can show gratitude, surely man can do the same. You know, need no further teachings than the above in order to show gratitude." And then there's a really important part, "And you must show it truly in the only real way in your daily life. Our daily life should be spent constantly in selfless activity with no waste of time whatsoever." So definitely for Dogen, gratitude isn't just a feeling. Gratitude, if it's real, has to be expressed and shown. So what does it mean to feel gratitude for the founders? Who are the founders? And how do we express that gratitude? How do we live it now? I think there are many many different ways in which you can look at who are the founders. And in terms of the founders, we talk specifically about the founders of this temple. And in our specific situation we're in here, obviously, a very important place is the role of Ren Master Jiyu in founding the order, in training in Japan, and bringing the teaching to the West and sharing it with us here. Were it not for her life and her dedication, certainly the Buddhism we practice would not be as it is at the moment. The particular flavour of Buddhism we practice within the order is obviously very strongly influenced, determined, you could say, to a large extent by her understanding, her practice. So there's obviously a lot of gratitude there for the amount that she gave in being willing to go there, to Japan, and to train there with all the hardships there, and then to come back and set up something from scratch in the West, both in America and also over here. And of course, she was able to do that because there was someone in Japan she could go and train with. She was able to do that because she was able to train with her master, Kohei Zenji. And it was through learning the practice with him and from him, through practicing under his supervision, under his guidance, that she herself was able to learn Buddhism so that she was then able to bring it to the West and share it with us. And of course Kohei Zenji was able to do that because he had trained with his teacher, and so it goes on all the way back. So that the founders of the temple here are specifically, yes, Ren Master Jiyu, Kohei Zenji, but really the founders go all the way back to the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, at least, that each of the founders was able to pass on the teaching because they themselves were able to study with their own teacher, who was able to pass on the teaching because they were able to study with their own teacher. And so it goes back all the way through however many generations in Japan and back to Keizan and Dogen. And Dogen was obviously a very important link in that he brought the teaching and the practice from China to Japan. But before that, there were however many generations in China practicing it. And again, Bodhidharma is an important teacher in the lineage. Again, bringing the teaching from India to China, where it had been practiced, again, for whatever it was, 28 generations since the time of since the time of the Buddha. The further you go back in time, the less certain it is exactly who these people were. We have a lineage for India, but we, there weren't written records in the way that there were in later times. But that really isn't the point. It's not about exactly who they were or whether we know who they were. Clearly there was someone who in each generation, at least one person, perhaps many people, who passed on the teaching. And even if we don't know exactly who they are or who their names were, still there's gratitude for their living the practice and passing it on. Without necessarily being famous, there are lots of names in the lineage in China and in Japan of people that we really know very little about. Bodhidharma's very well known, if he existed. He's very well known whether he existed or not. The sixth ancestor, Huineng, Dogen, Keizan, Manzan, other people in the lineage who are really quite well known. But in between, there are many more people who perhaps we know the name, but perhaps we don't know very much else about them. But their offering to all of us, to everyone who comes later, is that they carried on the practice, and that they taught it not by learning it and passing it on, but by embodying it. And it's the embodying of it, really, is the crucial thing that is passed on, that is lived in each generation. And because it's lived, others are able to see it, and so it goes on to the next generation. But as well as our particular lineage, there are of course many other people in every generation who are practicing. When, for example, the sixth Chinese ancestor Huineng had very many disciples, and our particular lineage is descended from one of those disciples. But all the others were also training with Huineng, and from one of the other disciples there, the Rinzai lineage and a number of other schools developed, and from some of the others no schools developed, but nevertheless they were all practicing the Buddha's truth. They were practicing their master's teachings, and they all added to the sense of Buddhism being there and being real in their times, in their culture, in the place where they lived. And that is the Sangha in every generation. And whether the particular lineage that we have inherited goes through any particular individual or doesn't, nevertheless they were all what made Buddhism real in those times. And I think this is really brought out by the way that Dogen in the Shobogenzo uses examples of very many stories involving monks from the past, or teachings that monks have given, some of which are from our lineage, but actually very many aren't. They're from the other lineages that descended from Huineng. And Dogen is very keen to not use the term the Soto Zen sect, or even the Zen sect. He just wants to be known as this is Buddhism, and there isn't really a division between our school and the other school. We're all doing our best to practice the Buddha's truth, and yes, different people interpret it in slightly different ways. We're all slightly different. We live it as seems real for us, seems authentic for us. And because there are lots of different people who then come to learn, it's good to have that spectrum of people who express things in slightly different ways. Because for one person, they might really connect with one monk's or one teacher's way of talking about things, but not with another. Whereas someone else, it might be completely the other way around. So the fact that we have this widespread sangha, I think, is a real. Real strength of Buddhism, also because all and any of those individuals who are passing on the teaching, they're not doing that in isolation, they're doing that in the context of the teaching that all the other people are giving, and they all feed into each other. There's something for us all to learn, really, from all the different ways in which Buddhism is practiced, and to be willing to hear the teaching and whether it's expressed in a way that seems to be more accessible to us, or whether it's in ways that seem a bit harder to hear, but perhaps we need to make a little bit more effort there to hear the Dharma that that someone else is sharing with us. So in that sense, the Buddhism that has come down to us is not just through the lineage of the teaching being passed down from master to disciple, from teacher to student. It's formed really by all who practice at any one time. It's the general Sangha who are the founders of Buddhism as it's passed on to the next generation. Even beyond that, the scripture that we recited today, the Immeasurable Life of the Tathagata, tries to explain the teaching that Buddhism didn't originate with Shakyamuni Buddha. It's not something that he invented, very much something that he found, that he came to know the truth of something that's an essential part of the nature of existence. That Buddha is the nature of existence. The nature of existence is Buddha. It's always there for us to find. It isn't limited by the lifespan of a human being, or even by the existence of human beings. As a human being, we see it most easily in the teaching of another human being, but nevertheless, as the scripture says, the life of the Buddha is immeasurable. The existence of Buddha is beyond the limitations of human lifespans. And whatever situation we find ourselves in, if we can see clearly enough, Buddhism is there for us to find. Now, of course, the thing is, how clearly can we see? And without anyone to point the way, although Buddha might be there, is there, would we actually see it? Would we actually be able to practice and understand just from seeing the nature of reality? As confused human beings, that's rather tricky for us, because we start off, at least, not seeing things clearly. And so, even though all the clues are there, we don't really know how to see them, how to pick up on them, how to interpret them. And as Dogen said in that bit that I quoted, if the truth had not spread throughout the entire world, it would have been impossible for us to have found it, even should we have been willing to give our very lives for it. Even though the Buddha might be here, is here, if we ourselves are not able to see that, then we make little or no progress in our understanding of the nature of existence. It's so helpful as confused beings to have the truth pointed out to us, and to have an example of a human being who is embodying that we can actually see, not just learning words in a book but about Buddha, but actually seeing examples of people who are living it. And that, I think, is the crucial role that founders have, that it's not so much passing something on from generation to generation, it's in embodying it and showing it, and giving a real living example of what it means to live and function as Buddha. And all those of us who have met a teacher who we have very much been influenced by, might be Rinpoche Master Daishin or Rinpoche Master Jiu, we see in them an embodiment of that practice. These are all the teachers of the past, and we see that in each generation all those who practice Buddhism are, in a very real sense, the founders of the next Buddhism in the next generation. And when we look at the founders, we think of all those who have passed the teaching on in the past. Yes, there's a great feeling of gratitude there. When we think of the founders, we shouldn't do that in a way that sets them on a pedestal and devalues us, that we see them as the great ones in the past who practiced, and then there's just us who are just kind of, I don't know, bumbling around in the darkness. That really undercuts our own practice. Much more, I think it's really helpful to see, to realise that we too are the founders. in this generation, all of us who practice are the founders who pass on the teaching, embody the teaching, so that other people who come along have some idea about it. And it really doesn't matter whether we think we're fully enlightened being Buddhas who are doing a really good job of it, or whether we think we're actually doing a terrible job of it and only barely getting it. The important thing is that we have the intent to train, and that we put that into practice as well as we're able to. And it's not actually about achievement, it's very much more about putting that intention into practice, because it's that very, very putting into practice of the intention is what we can share, what we show, what we can embody. Irrespective of whether we think we're doing well in practice or whether we think we're stumbling along and making a right mess of it, well, part of the practice is just to let go of those views of ourselves. But what we show, the important thing is the intent that we bring to practice, the open-heartedness, the wish to do our best, the willingness, if you like. And what is it that we teach? Well, it's that willingness. That's the crucial thing that we show to others, that willingness to see the ways in which we cause suffering for others and let go of that. See the ways in which we cause suffering for ourselves and let go of that. It's not about an outcome or a result. It's about the heart of that very willingness is the heart of Buddha that's being expressed. So how do we express that heart of willingness, that heart of gratitude each day? Well, I would say that whenever we practice, we are becoming founders. We are being founders not just for anyone else who comes, but for ourselves indeed. So for each of us who have taken either monastic or lay ordination and have a kesa, in the morning we may, when we put that on, say the kesa verse. And saying that kesa verse, I'd say, is setting a foundation for the day, in the same way that if we meditate in the morning or even later in the day, that's a foundation for what we do next. When we say, I wish to unfold the Buddha's teaching, that I may help all living things, that's an expression of our intent. And that very expression of our intent is laying a foundation then for how we live our lives and how we express the practice. And how we then express and embody the practice makes a difference not just to our lives, but to those who we come into contact with. Not because we're trying to pass on the teaching, or we're trying to teach, or we're trying to be a Buddha, just through being willing to let go of the being driven by the fear, the desire, the anxiety, whatever else it might be that arises in our minds, just through being willing to let go of that and do our best to clarify the intention, the original intention of Buddha, the intention to know the nature of reality as well as we can, and the intention to find the end of suffering. And when we reflect on our own practice, I find it helpful just to bear in mind, well, if we're the founders, if we are amongst the founders, what is the Buddhism that we are giving foundation to? What is it that we are founding in this generation? And that's not to make us be critical or judgmental of our practice, but just to reflect on, well, actually, how do I live? What Buddhism is it that I am expressing and living, and that is then seen in the world and exists in the world? And for me, that brings me really full circle back to gratitude. Our gratitude for the life we have, our gratitude for the fact that Buddhism is here and now and available to us, our gratitude for the fact that we're in a circumstance where we are actually able to practice. We're not subject to any restrictions or persecutions or anything like that. We can practice the Buddha's truth, and there's a great gratitude for that fact. And the very sitting down in meditation is a an expression of that gratitude. And as Dogen says, it's making that gratitude real. That gratitude isn't just a feeling or a thought. You need no further teachings than the above in order to show gratitude, and you must show it truly in the only real way in your daily life. Our daily life should be spent constantly in selfless activity with no waste of time whatsoever. Dogen's very uncompromising. He sets a high bar for us to aspire to. No waste of time whatsoever. Our daily life should be spent constantly in selfless activity. It's not about whether we think we achieve that or not. It's about much more about the intention that we bring to that. The intention to make gratitude real in our lives. Not just having it as a thought or a feeling or an idea, but the gratitude is shown, our gratitude to the founders, all those who have passed Buddhism on, our gratitude for that is shown in the way that we ourselves continue to embody what they embodied and that we pass on what they passed on. With no judging of ourselves, in the sense that, as the phrase, they in the past were as we are now, and we will be as they in the future. Which is not to say they're better and we're worse, it's just that there is an ongoing unfolding of the practice. And we here and now have the opportunity to express that and make our gratitude a real embodied aspect of our lives, or the whole of our lives, you could say, by being willing to carry on the tradition that we have been so lucky to inherit. So I would say there's gratitude for everything in the past that has enabled us to be able to practice here and now. And there's also seeing that we have a responsibility to all those in the future to embody that, to keep that going. But in saying those two things, gratitude for the past and responsibility for the future, or responsibility to the future, it's not actually that we focus on the past or that we focus on the future. Our focus is our practice here and now. So gratitude for the past and responsibility to the future are both expressed by our practice here and now, in this very life, at this very time. And I think that's how we express our gratitude to the founders.